Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another episode of the M Squared TechCast. It's Monday afternoon. Must be us.
Or something. Or at least we think it is.
Yes.
Right?
How you doing, Mike?
Well, good. July 31st already. Where did the summer go?
I don't know. Well, we have one more month of it anyway.
Well, September is usually nice, too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. When I lived up north, that was my favorite month because after Labor Day, all the tourists were gone. The weather was still good.
So, it's like Ann Arbor in August. Well, actually, they'll all be like the Capistrano Swallows. They'll all be coming back shortly. But right now.
Yeah, but at least the art fair's over, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
We've got a great show for you. A lot of good guests today. We're going to get it started with one of our favorites, Keith Brophy, State Director of the Michigan Small Business Development Center, and he has a guest. So, Keith, if you would, please take it away.
Thank you, and I am delighted to have with me today Mark Brandt, the market president at First Community Bank. And Mark is joining us because Mark has been taking a look at the future. We participated together in a recent panel at Great Lakes Lenders Conference, where I talked about some transformational trends and then asked a couple representatives of the banking industry about how this changing world might be felt from the banking perspective. So, Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Keith.
And Mark, could you share at first to our audience a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yes, I have been in the banking business for quite a number of years, I think over 30 at this point, and worked with much larger institutions in the Cleveland, Ohio area, and more recently returned to Grand Rapids to lead First Community, which is a family-owned bank here in Grand Rapids. We focus a lot on lending to small businesses here in the market.
And Mark, I know you have devoted some thought to the future of the market and of banking and our transforming world. And we live in an age where there's a number of emerging technologies like autonomous vehicles, drones, shifting workforce, shifting retail to more and more online, artificial intelligence. And that has ripple effects both from the businesses in those industries all the way to Main Street business. But first, let's talk about tech businesses that are in those industries. Why might the banking industry at large be a bit apprehensive about lending to businesses that are focused on some of these new breed technologies?
That's a good point. I think a lot of traditional lenders are apprehensive, mainly because sometimes those businesses don't have a long track record, and so lenders may not think they're proven yet. The business may not be profitable. There may not be collateral that banks typically look at. Banks like fixed assets, like real estate and equipment and the machinery and those kinds of things, and many of our newer technology businesses don't have those kinds of things. And then finally, the business owners of these businesses may not have a long track record of success. Again, newer businesses, new ideas. So a lot of things that traditional lenders need to adjust to.
Yeah. So let's talk about the other extreme, in a sense, of Main Street businesses, traditional small business, non-techie businesses. For example, businesses that might be impacted by a world of autonomous vehicles that could exist, let's say, 10 years down the road. Some would say 5 years, some would say 15 years, but let's assume autonomous vehicles begin to become widespread. Do you think that will affect businesses like auto body shops, car mechanics, law practices that specialize in DUIs, convenience stores, they have to carefully pick their locations to be by high traffic locations. Do you think there will be a ripple effect from autonomous vehicles to traditional small businesses?
Oh, absolutely. There'll be a huge shift from that perspective. Many Main Street businesses will be impacted. Certainly, autonomous vehicles make fewer mistakes, so therefore there's fewer accidents, fewer issues, fewer lawsuits. Think about how it changes dramatically industries that we're familiar with, like auto insurance. That's another Main Street business. That's changed dramatically. So I do see it changing and creating, some businesses not doing well because of that, and other businesses certainly rising because of shifts. I wouldn't want to be right now in the business of making automotive mirrors because technology is changing where you now have a rear-view camera instead of a rear-view mirror. I think you still have both. But by the same token, it's changing, and businesses, especially Main Street businesses, need to change with it.
Would you rather make a loan to a floral shop today that delivers by delivery truck or delivers by drone or that delivers by a mix of the two, if you had to pick one of those three models of business to make a loan to?
I'd love to see the mix of both the forward-thinking drone and frankly, I think as bankers, as lenders, we need to be having conversations with our clients about those things. And I really love to see businesses that are thinking about the future and experimenting with things like alternative ways to make deliveries, because that tells me that the business owner is very sharp and is thinking about the future, not just today. And I like that.
You seem very forward-thinking in your outlook. From your perspective, how is the lending community at large preparing for the adoption of these technologies?
Well, I think there's a wide variety of issues out there, and there's a wide variety of ways that banks are dealing with them. Some are more forward-thinking than others. I think the forward-thinking ones are well-positioned to be successful in terms of talking with clients and talking with other people that impact businesses in the community about where various businesses are headed. So to the extent that lenders can do that and to the extent that lenders can have those ongoing discussions, talk about ideas, future ideas, they'll do much better. Lenders today have access to way more information than they used to have, and so that's another differentiator. Lenders that can harness and use information and social media and other new technologies will certainly be positioned to thrive with their business customers down the road.
How do you think these ripple effects of the emerging technologies will impact real estate values? Do you think there's any kind of predictable shift in real estate patterns down the road?
Oh, yes. I would think that there will be eventual changes just because many businesses, especially Main Street businesses, are designed around traffic patterns. You have gas stations on busy corners, pharmacies on busy corners, those things change with our commuting patterns and with certainly autonomous vehicles as well. So I think that we'll see change, probably more gradual change in the real estate market because of those things. But absolutely, we'll see real estate changes. The other thing that changes is where people choose to live. Again, with emerging technology, we see shifts to different people being able to live in different parts of the country because of technology shifts. And those are good things from a standpoint of people being able to enjoy living where they want to live. Big impact on businesses, certainly on the Main Street level, relative to commuting patterns.
One risk of being one who can anticipate the arrival of new technologies is that you can often run into cynics that that are in denial that given emerging technology is really going to have impact. For example, the internet. Some of us are of the seasoning that we can still recall conversations about the internet being available for commercial businesses. And I remember many skeptics telling me that no business would ever really adopt the internet for a platform to do business on because it was too unreliable. Then technologies march on and have a way of becoming just the norm. But there's always kind of the early cynic phase. As you think about technology, can you think of an example of a technology that once seemed far, far off, but that ultimately has changed the way that we currently do business lending?
Certainly there. I mentioned the information that we have. To your point on the technology changing our business, ATMs were a big deal when I was getting started in the banking career, and nobody really thought that we would ever do transactions online. But from an evolution standpoint, we're doing lots and more transactions online, and we're moving closer and closer to person-to-person payments and other changes like that. But I certainly didn't ever anticipate moving to person-to-person payments, but they're happening now. So that would be a big one in my view. But certainly we see continual changes, things like printing and publishing and newspapers and dramatic changes. So I think the naysayers on the technology really need to pay attention, because those shifts come along and they happen, and sometimes they change pretty rapidly. So,
okay, Keith, we're just about out of time here. So, Mark, why don't you tell people where they could reach you on the internet for more information about your BankNet services?
Sure. So, again, I'm Mark Brandt, First Community Bank, and the website is www.firstcb.com.
All right. Thanks very much. Keith Brophy, thanks for another interesting segment. State Director of the Michigan Small Business Development Go ahead, Mike. You take us out.
Michigan Small Business and Development Center. Yes.
Okay, that's good.
SBDC.
There you go, for short, yes.
Okay.
This is Mike Brennan, and my tongue-tied friend is Matt Roush. Yes.
Thanks, I needed the help. And this is the M-Squared TechCast. We'll be right back with cybersecurity expert Dan Lohrman. It's Matt Roush.
You did that good. And
thanks.
Mike Brennan.
Yeah, well, I know my own name, at least a little. And we're back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast here on the PodcastDetroit.com network. We've got a regular guest here for this segment, a cybersecurity expert out of Grand Ledge, Michigan, Dan Lohrman, former Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Michigan and a world of experience in these matters. Dan, welcome to the program. And there's something Mike and I really want to talk with you about.
Yes, actually, you blogged about it on Sunday, and Matt's already lining up. He wants to get that chip embedded so LTU can track him everywhere he goes.
Not.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I think I misunderstood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that I can't remember the name of the company, but I read that a couple of times, and I went, what? You know, so tell I mean, the audience may not know about it, so since you wrote a blog about it, why don't you share the details?
Sure. Well, thanks. Great to be on the show again. So employees at Three Square Market, it's a vending machine. They call themselves a technology company in Wisconsin, but they really kind of shocked the world or made a lot of headlines last week, saying that tomorrow, actually August 1st, This is supposed to be happening tomorrow, they're going to be embedding chips. It's a voluntary process for them. It's going to be a rice-sized microchip in the hand between their thumb and their forefinger. They're going to basically be putting a chip in there for convenience, and you'll be able to use it's an RFID chip that they say is 256-bit encryption. They claim it's hack-proof. With the wave of a hand, employees will be able to open doors that require identification cards, log into their computers, operate copy machines, pay for snacks at the snack bar, and those kinds of things. So this is not a medical type of process. This is just for convenience.
And I always like it when they say it can't be hacked. That sounds like a challenge to me, right?
It sure does. Man, throwing down a gauntlet there. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I think the reaction has been really interesting. I mean, when the story first came out last week, I think certainly in the security community, people were really pretty negative. There were a few people who were supportive of it. But by and large, I think... at the same time in Black Hat, they were announcing that ID cards could be cloned with a less secure version of an RFID card. So that's probably not apples to apples comparison there. But they were literally showing that demo end of last week out in Las Vegas about how to clone ID cards. So. It certainly brings up a lot of issues. I think people feel less worried about this particular situation, this particular company doing this, than is it opening up Pandora's box? You know, where is this going? A lot of questions out there around articles asking questions. Like one article I read said, if you could inject one. If you could, use this to, get rid of your car keys, to all of your credit cards, if all this personal information was on there and it was secure, big if, would you do it? And I think just the privacy implications of the big brother, the idea that you're putting a chip into you, even people, claiming Bible prophecies and things. I mean, there's a lot of fear around this. So it's a fascinating topic.
Yeah,
what are they using as the justification for this? Because I mean, if security or convenience is the issue, isn't there relatively cheap biometric stuff now that they could use instead, just a thumbprint or something like that?
Absolutely, yeah, I think my daughter I think said it pretty well yesterday. She said that Dad, they're doing this as a PR, move. They're getting, millions of people know who this company is now, so they're probably going to be selling more product.
That's actually pretty shrewd. That is actually pretty shrewd observation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a PR stunt. It is. I mean, it's clearly they're getting attention all over the world. It was the same company did this in Sweden earlier, I think last year, and then in the spring. There's been some of this happening in Europe. It really clearly is a baby step not baby step, it's putting it in your body. And they say that these employees are volunteering, so this is not mandatory. And I guess like over two-thirds of the employees said they wanted to do it. It gave them all, good publicity. I think it raises that there were all kinds of interesting comments, though, on LinkedIn and other different people sending stuff to me saying, is this, optional now, but will it become, required later or strongly encouraged, or will you lose a promotion if you don't get the chip, or will you not be, maybe not get fired, but, you know, what could happen if you don't volunteer? Is there going to be pressure? I mean, I think it's clearly there's been a lot of people who've kind of pushed back on this. But I think it is, you know, we could look back at this 3-5 years from now and say this was a watershed moment where, you know, for volunteer purposes, not for medical purposes, not to put a chip in your brain to help, you know, solve some, you know, cancer issue or something like that. But this is something that is, you know, literally optional to replace ID cards.
You know, my other concern would be with the RFID transmitting constantly within your body. Is that going to do something to your body?
They say it's a static process, but there are medical concerns. That's a great question, Mike. And I think, they said that it rarely, but this chip can actually move to different parts of your body. So it's very rare, but it could happen. So that doesn't give you a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
I mean, if you read about it, it's interesting. It's all over the place. Anybody can just really, my blog, I think you're going to probably post this, but...
did this morning, yeah.
You know, all the big magazines are talking about it, you know, where next for microchip implants. But, you know, it's a three-square market. This company is getting tons of publicity. I'm sure it's going to be another round of publicity tomorrow when they actually go through this process, and we'll probably see pictures and interviews with employees this week. No doubt it's going to be all over the place. I guess I ask you guys, would you guys implant a chip if you knew it was secure, which is a big if? I mean, would you put the chip in your hand?
No, I
wouldn't either. I don't see the necessity. There are so many other ways to go about security, and frankly, so many other ways to track me. Like everybody else, my phone's always on for one thing. I just don't see a need for it. And with cheap biometrics out there, you know, thumbprint identification and all of that stuff, I don't see the need and I don't see the advantage of it.
I'm going with your daughter, Dan. I think it's a cheap publicity stunt. But, hey, it's working, right? So
yeah, we're sitting here talking about it, right?
I mean, and it's, you know, I think the other big question that comes into play, I just add one other thing, guys, before we wrap this up, is people think about this. You know, there's this whole laundry list of things they're not doing. It's interesting. Oh, we're not doing GPS. We're not doing, you know, we are doing encryption, but we're, and, you know, the thing I worry about, let's just say for a second, which I don't necessarily believe, but let's say for a second the encryption is secure and the chip is secure, which I'm not 100% there, but let's just say that was the case. It's really about, we've talked about this in the past, people, process, and technology. So it's the person who's typing in that, you know, Mike is this chip and Dan is this chip and Matt is that chip. So if that guy was a bad guy, could they swap chips or swap, not necessarily chips in your skin, but, you know, what that chip represents. So it's really all the processes around that chip. And then in addition to that, I just think down the road you're going to see people, or that laundry list of things is we're not doing GPS, we're not tracking you around your house, we're not tracking you when you leave the office, you know, we're not tracking when you go to the restroom, how long you're in the restroom. But who's to say they won't do that in the future, or somebody else won't come along and say, well, we are going to turn on GPS or that kind of thing. So I just think it opens up Pandora's box of a lot of questions.
Yeah, well, it do. So let's also, we only got about 5 minutes. I know you're at Black Hat. Now, what caught your eye there at Black Hat? You were mentioning they were cloning the security cards.
Yeah, there's a lot of. I mean, it's interesting. It's always a lot of buzz around a number of different things. Yeah, cloning ID cards is huge. I think just going is an experience. You know, everything. Literally going. Same things that happened in the past. For those who haven't been there, phones. You know, you basically. Wi-Fi is hacked within, you know, seconds.
Yeah.
If you turn on Wi-Fi, you know, on different devices, the examples of hacking virtually most devices, I mean, just so many different announcements around examples, show and tell, a lot of virtual reality headsets. I don't know if you saw the pictures in a number of different magazines where, you know, the whole audience is just all wearing these headsets, virtual reality. So that whole world of You know, virtual reality is coming into play with all the, you know, the big Google and I think Facebook and others are all going to be coming out with new 3D types of things and virtual reality worlds over the next coming year. So that's obviously getting a lot of buzz as well.
What else? Anything else that caught your attention there?
Yeah, no, I think the, you know, the one big thing, you know, that government, you know, is always trying to work through is, you know, what's the role for, you know, government? Will there be all kinds of different? Actually, we just had that in Michigan as well. I don't know if you've heard about that. I could throw that out here as well. But you know, what type of protections? What type of new regulations around Internet of Things devices we're going to be talking about? Hearing some talks about different leaders in Washington. We need to do very similar to the RSA conference last year. I think we had this conversation a few months back related to new laws coming in place, protections, legislation around IoT. How much should government involvement be involved? You know, coming. There was a big article that actually just came out this morning. Bring it back to Michigan for a second, and I'll send that to you as well, Mike. You can post that. Just came out from the Pew Institute that the Michigan legislature is talking about our Michigan Cyber Corps, and I don't know if you guys heard about this, but possibly expanding that to help small businesses. That's kind of our volunteer fire department for cyber, if you will. People, we created that about 4 years ago. Governor Rick Snyder did. I was actually part of that when it first got launched. And if there was a big cyber emergency, we could bring people in to help in the cyber emergency. The Michigan legislature is now talking about expanding that, giving immunity to people who help, like small businesses, and using the Cyber Corps to both train up new people in cyber in Michigan to attract talent, to really help, you know, college-age kids, you know, get more hands-on experience, but also to be able to help small businesses and nonprofits who maybe don't have that security expertise. And I think it's really kind of a cool idea. It looks like the legislature is going to vote on that here real soon, and that would really expand the Michigan Cyber Corps. So I think government involvement in these topics was certainly a big issue.
All right, Dan, we're under a minute to go here, so give people your contact information, please, and we'll call it a segment.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate that. Yeah, again, Dan Lorman with Security Mentor. I'm the Chief Security Officer, and I can be you can follow me at GovCSO, at GovCSO, and my blog is Lorman on Cybersecurity.
All right. Thanks very much, Dan Lorman, cybersecurity expert out of Grand Ledge, Michigan, with another fascinating segment on security. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back. And it's Matt Rausch.
We're having such a good time here. We're just laughing our way through these segments.
That is right. And we're sitting here staring at each other going, you start. No,
yeah,
you
no,
start.
You start.
Okay.
Yeah, no,
all right.
Okay. We didn't do the right hand signals there.
Well,
but we do have a good guest in the studio. I love it when we have him in studio because lower issues with Skype and things. Selena Mancina. I got that right.
Mm-hmm.
Operations Director for Grand Circus, downtown Detroit. training hundreds of coders and whatnot every year.
The Tech Training Experts, the Tech Training Institute in downtown Detroit.
Got that Aussie that runs the show. Hey, Mike.
And you're in Grand Rapids now, too, right?
Yep, we're in Grand Rapids as well. We opened officially in January, so we have a location right in downtown Grand Rapids.
You're at with DeVos there at Start Garden.
Yeah.
Start Garden, yep. Okay.
We have some classroom space there.
That's kind of the other end of Grand River, although it turns into Cascade Road once you get into
it's a long road. So,
you gotta call yourself Cascade over there, I guess. I don't know. All right. So you are offering in conjunction with a little bitty company I've never heard of before called
Goggle
Facebook.
Goggle or something, wasn't it?
No,
it's Facebook. Yeah, that was it. Okay. Yeah.
A little bitty company called Facebook has gotten together with you, and you are talking about offering free developer training. So why don't you tell us how people can get connected with that?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. First, I want to just give like a little bit of a brief overview of Grand Circus. So Grand Circus started in 2013 with the goal of training people to become web developers. So since then, we've trained over 1,000 people in web development, whether it's back-end training or front-end training, and with the goal of helping them launch their career in technology. So in June, we got in touch with Facebook, and they expressed an interest in partnering with us to train a number of people over the next few years. And part of that partnership was a Facebook boot camp. So our goal is to train about 25 people across the state of Michigan. So there will be students in Detroit and in Grand Rapids. It'll be front-end curriculum, but we'll also be teaching React, which is a Facebook framework. So our goal is to start that application process. Actually, it opened on Wednesday. So if people are interested, they can actually go to our website and start reading about it, reading the FAQs, and apply. And it is a rolling application. So it's first come, first serve. So if you think you're interested, don't hold out, because as soon as we fill the program, we will close applications. So if anybody's interested, they can go to grandcircus.co/Facebook bootcamp.
So what's the time commitment that you're looking for here from folks?
Yeah, so it is a full-time commitment. So it'll be 10 weeks, 8 weeks in person, 2 weeks of pre-work at home. It'll begin on October 16th and run through December 8th. So students will graduate right before the holidays.
So are you talking about once a week, every day?
Every day,
That is a commitment.
Yep, so our boot camps are full-time, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So it's a full-time commitment. So usually when people are coming into our programs, it's because they want to be a developer, so they're either taking a leave of absence from their current job or they're quitting their current job to become a developer.
So, you know, when I use Facebook and load stuff up, which I do all the time, I'm trying to figure out why would I need to do development? I mean, what is it they're bringing to the party here that I'm not following on?
Yeah. So Facebook has a goal of just training people in development. They want to reach the masses, and they decided to come to Michigan as like their pilot program, and they partnered with Grand Circus because we have a pretty good track record of training people. Facebook is funding the program. So anybody who applies, it's fully funded, and our tuition is $8,500. So it's a really awesome opportunity for anybody that's interested and applies and gets in. But the React is a Facebook framework. So Facebook owns it and uses it. So if you learn that framework, you won't get a job at Facebook necessarily, but you can use it to do digital marketing and other pieces like that, really at any company. And
that's what I'm trying to bore into is what exactly are you being trained to do? Is it digital marketing?
Correct, yep. So we've partnered with Accenture, and they will be involved with us. They are doing guaranteed round one interviews for all the students, a part of the program. And they have agreed to take a certain portion of those students that will work on their digital marketing scrum teams.
Okay. Now, is this a one-shot deal? Do you think there'll be another one in the spring? You don't know or what?
We don't know. There's always potential to do more. This is the pilot program, the first time we've partnered with them on something like this. So right now, this is it, but there's always a chance to do more in the future.
Sure.
So forgive me if you've already mentioned this. How many people are you looking for this class?
We're looking for about 25 people.
Okay.
And they'll be both in Detroit and Grand Rapids. They'll be split halfway probably.
Okay. And this is in classroom with instructors, or is it online, or is it blended?
It's all in-person training. So we'll have instructors. They'll be in our space, both in Stark Garden and Grand Rapids and downtown at our location in Detroit.
Okay. So you're teaching people to code, essentially, but it's more than that, right?
Yeah, we're teaching people to code. That's a big chunk of the curriculum, but we're teaching them React, which is a framework, which will help them get a job in digital marketing or build apps, but from a digital marketing perspective, so they can kind of see both sides of the product.
Including mobile apps or not?
Not necessarily mobile applications, but this is a really good platform for people to jump off from there. So some people do end up going into mobile applications. Some people stick with front-end curriculum or back-end programming. It really depends what they're interested in after the boot camp, but this is a perfect you know, baseline education for that.
And Accenture used to be called something else, but I can't remember what. Do you remember what it was called before? I'm trying
to. No, I don't actually.
What is it? They. What
I think it was a part of Arthur Anderson before. I'm trying to remember. It was part of an accounting firm, I think, at some
was
point.
It?
But they branched off as a separate consulting business and got away from the accounting.
Yeah. They're definitely doing consulting. They work with a lot of large companies across the country, across the world, to be.
Oh, I see. Now I'm getting the more. So you would get this training, and maybe then you would get a job at a large company.
No, you get a job. You potentially would get a job at Accenture. They have guaranteed to interview all the students, and they may potentially take a portion.
And then they would
students.
Work with a large company
Correct.
To help them.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep.
All right. Now
definitely.
So there is a huge shortage of developer talent, right? Both in Michigan and everywhere else.
Yep, definitely. So that's kind of the reason why Grand Circus got started in 2013 is there was a large shortage, particularly in Michigan. Everyone was outsourcing or they were, you know, bringing people in from the coast, East Coast and West Coast. And we thought, why can't we just train the people that are already here to do the job? And we've been pretty successful at it thus far. We work with over 140 companies in Michigan where our students are working, whether in the Metro Detroit area or on the west side of the state.
Well, let's probably talk a little bit more about Grand Circus. This may be the first time that folks are out there, I find it hard to believe, but they may have not heard of it before. So kind of walk us through what other kinds of stuff you do there.
Yeah, so not only do we train people to become developers, which is our bread and butter, we also have a co-working space that we host, you know, multiple different entrepreneurs in, and then we also host events. We have a large event space on our fourth floor, different meetups, and companies can use our space for events or meetings or off-site trainings. So we do a lot of different things to help the community come together.
Huh. Okay.
All right. Tell me about a little bit about the jobs that these people will get after getting through this training. This is a very obvious question, but what do they make roughly?
Yeah, so our students typically want to be developers, but that's a certain portion of our students. They can go into project managers, business analysts. Maybe they want to go into more of the business side, but they want to be able to speak technically to developers when they're working with clients. So about 65% of our students do go into full-time developer roles, but the other students may go into something different, but they want that technical background because it is extremely valuable to have on your resume. And we see our students roughly making anywhere, if they're a full-time developer, anywhere between $40,000 and $60,000 a year starting out, and there's so much room for growth after they get that first year of experience. They can go on to a new company, they can become a team leader at an organization. There's a ton of room for growth once they get that initial experience.
And what's the demographic? Are they tend to be younger folks, or is it a mishmash of folks?
So we train career transitioners. So we're usually seeing students that are in their late 20s, early 30s that have had some professional experience, but they want to be a developer. So they're leaving their old jobs behind, whether they were in finance, or we get a lot of teachers, so a lot of folks in education that say, hey, I don't want to do this job anymore. I've always been interested in technology. Like, this is going to be my deep dive, my education that I want to get. So they come to us and we train them both technically, but also the soft skills training is really important as well. And then we help them with that job assistance process to help them match up with some companies.
And then this one obviously is paid for. Typically, though, your programs are in the thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. Now, are scholarships available for folks, or do they pay on their own?
Yep. It really depends what the student is able to do, but we do have scholarships for women, veterans, LGBTQ, minorities in technology, and we do have multiple financing partners. So if you can't, you know, pay with a credit card or pay with cash, we do have financing partners that you can take a loan out from to cover the cost of tuition.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So where is this located? Where are you downtown?
We're at 1570 Woodward, right downtown in the Broderick Tower.
Oh, okay.
So if you're familiar with where Comerica Park is, we're right there.
Literally just down the street from Grand Circus, right?
Yeah, we're literally in Grand Circus Park.
Yeah, hence the name. It all makes sense now.
Yes.
So what's your background? I'm just curious how you got connected with these folks, started working there.
Yeah, so I went to Western Michigan University for sales and marketing, and when I ended up coming back to the east side of the state, I was working in a sales position and just started kind of browsing around to see what else was out there. And I had a friend that was actually working in the Grand Circus co-working space, and she connected me with Damien. And at the time, Grand Circus is only five people large. So I was one of the first people that came to Grand Circus when we actually kicked off our first boot camp. So I've been around since our very first boot camp, and we did our 50th boot camp in June. So
wow, that's great.
I've seen a lot of students come through, a lot of really awesome things.
Now, you've expanded to Grand Rapids. Are there any plans to expand elsewhere around the state, or thoughts about it, discussions?
We're always talking about what we can do to grow Grand Circus. Potentially in the future, there might be a third location. It's definitely not on the calendar for this year, or probably not even early next year, but potentially later next year, we might look into doing something.
You're thinking Lansing, Traverse City? Where do you think?
I'm not sure. We're thinking probably in like the tri-state area, so it might not necessarily be Michigan.
Okay,
it might
gotcha.
Be in a different state, but really, it's kind of up in the air right now.
There's that large city over on the other side of the lake. What's that called again? Chicago. I think.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Probably not Chicago.
Okay, yeah. Well, the other one, Cleveland. You
Cleveland.
Could go that
there,
direction.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. There's a guy named Gilbert with a few things in Cleveland.
Yeah,
think,
he'd be so. A good...
We could go south, yep.
So in that case, it'd be east. That would be sort of northeast, right?
Oh, you're right, yep.
Yep. Okay, so what are the minimum requirements for someone to get into this program?
Yeah, we're definitely looking for someone with a little bit of experience in coding, whether they went to school or they learned it on their own or they did it in a job. Someone that has a college degree or some college coursework, and someone that has some professional experience. So it doesn't have to be in a certain industry, could have worked in finance, education, could marketing, whatever. But someone that has a little bit more professional experience is definitely what we're looking for.
Okay. And obviously you have to be a grown up. So you have to be at least 18.
18 or older. Yeah. Yep. This is definitely for adults.
Well, you got that covered, don't you, Matt?
several times over, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I remember seeing something about the ideal candidate. So sort of describe the person you're really looking for.
Yeah, the ideal candidate kind of would have back-end experience with programming. Again, could be on their own. They just dabbled online and kind of figured things out on their own, or a professional setting or schooling. Someone that has a college degree or some college coursework. Someone that has a positive attitude, growth mindset, great attitude, willing to receive and give constructive feedback throughout the program, because it's extremely fast-paced and you have to be able to take feedback at a very fast speed when you're doing a lot of technical work and also the soft skill piece of it as well. So someone that's just really excited and passionate about learning to code. You didn't just hear about it and see the word Facebook and apply. You've been kind of thinking about this for a while.
Now, you were saying the first 25 that apply, but I mean, you're going to actually screen those folks,
oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's rolling applications, and we already have quite a few applications.
Yeah.
It's going to be start off with the application. Then there'll be a phone interview, an in-person interview. There'll be kind of like a technical assessment piece and a final interview.
So what's the website where people go to apply?
Yep. So it's grandcircus.co/Facebook bootcamp.
And then when are you going to make your decision on who actually gets the scholarships?
Yeah, it'll probably be within 2 to 3 weeks. It really depends.
Really fast,
yeah,
then.
It really depends on the applications that we receive, and it's rolling. So if we feel like 25 people that we see in the next 3 weeks are awesome, we'll close applications and we'll have a full program. So I really encourage people that are interested to apply sooner rather than later.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. Selena Mancina, Director of Operations at Grand Circus, talking to us about the free developer training funded by Facebook.
Yep.
Awesome.
Right, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And for right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast, proudly part of the I'm having trouble today. Proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. Time for our final segment of the day today. We've got our longtime friend, Rick Beckers of Cloud Tech One. He's the CEO, the head cheese, the big guy.
The big guy.
Indeed. And he's going to talk to us about a conference that he and Mike are working on.
Yes. So. We announced this a couple months ago. We'd originally scheduled it for October. But what's going on now, Rick?
Well, IoT Tech Connect was the name of it, and it's still on. It's just being pushed out a little bit. I think what we found, Mike, was that budgets were already spent, right?
Pretty much.
Everybody wants to get involved, you know, and we're talking to people and having good conversations and building a team. But the consensus is that sometime late March, I think 2018 is going to be a better opportunity for us to do this, and that's okay with me. I mean, there's still a lot of activity going on, and it'll give us more time to collect quality people and professionals and really show off some cool stuff.
And this is the first time for me, I can't say for you, that we've tried to do a major conference in what looked pretty easy from the outset. Turned out to be
heavier lift than we thought, right?
I was just really, really surprised. I thought there'd be a bandwagon effect, but since we're the new kids on the block, they're still kind of eyeballing us going, who are these guys? We're pivoting, and one of the things we're pivoting into is we're going to retool the IoT Tech Connect website.
Right.
Do lots of cool things there. I'm going to be doing a lot of content adding there. We're going to be doing the sort of the Huffington Post thing, recruiting folks that have, we'll ask for white papers and syllabuses and things like that and decide who we're going to post. But anybody, anywhere, for that matter, doesn't even have to be in Michigan or the Great Lakes. Yeah. Just as long as they write in English, I think that would be the only requirement.
We're going to give people a voice.
Yeah.
So if you've got something in your head and it's on paper and you're trying to do something and it's IoT, get in front of us. Let us get it out there. Let us get you introduced and networked with the rest of the people in our little family and grow this thing more and more and. Yeah, that'll lead us down the road till March 2018.
Yeah, the other part of that is, I've been doing this for so long, 17 years on my own, and so I know what the budget cycle is. And come the fourth quarter is when everyone's really earmarking their funds for the following year, and we obviously missed that cycle this year. But by letting them know about it now and showing them it's very reasonably priced, I assume we're still going to stay at the Marriott, right? Are we still looking at that?
Yeah.
We can introduce that idea, get it into the budget, get more buy-in, and essentially just have more time to line up this. Because so many things that I thought we had under control that the first thing everyone said was, who are your major speakers? And we were still lining that up. We were doing all this on the fly, so... That would be the first thing we'll have to do is get the major speakers lined up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by this. You do need more than a year to set up something like this.
Yeah.
You really do.
Well, the thing is that the technology goes so fast that and a year from now, Matt, we'll be talking about some other acronym.
Well, sure.
Right?
Oh, yep. You got to lean in there, Matt.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
A little too casual here.
Yeah. We learned a lot, and I've reached out to a lot of folks. The other thing is there's just IoT is so big, so many aspects to it. We're probably going to have to narrow it down somewhat.
No doubt about that.
Because it's
it's
everything, mm-hmm. So.
Well, it's a whole consumer economy. It's industrial economy. It's operations management, operations engineering.
Machine to machine.
Yeah.
Everything.
All of that stuff. Yeah. And the whole manufacturing aspect of it here in Michigan is a big deal.
Yes.
We even picked up just recently a new chapter, if you will, on the whole thing. And that is we've got a group of people that have tied in with us that are actually going to be teaching other people how to start IoT practices.
Mm.
So all of the business model mechanisms that go into place and the who's who and where's where. And so if you have an idea, we now have people that are, besides ourselves, that are fully in depth and knowledgeable in this stuff and can sit down with them and consult with them and so on, which I thought was really cool.
Yep. So I know you've done a lot of conferences. Well, we should get you involved in this too, right? Somehow.
Sure, I can moderate with anybody.
Yeah, so LTU.
I'm a moderate after all.
So. One of the things that.
Thanks for the plug.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. one of the things that we were looking at too is I've already talked to Tanya Matthews and Monica Weed and whole idea of doing some aspect of STEM, because, I mean, you got to have the skills in order to get into Internet of Things, right?
Right, absolutely.
And so definitely want to have a track in that area, because then we can get high school and middle school kids coming in and expose them, show them what this stuff is all about, right?
Yep, yep. Our Marburger STEM Center would be happy to help with that. We've got undergrads in computer science, mathematics and computer science at Lawrence Tech, which is more the software end of things, and then computer engineering. We've got a separate program there that's more the hardware end of things, and you would need both, I would think.
Yeah, so, absolutely. You know.
And there are plenty of other fine institutions of higher education around here that we could pull into this thing, too.
You know what's funny, though, guys, is I thought the same thing. You know, we were looking at this from a community perspective, that we wanted the county and the state and all those folks who have obviously a reason to get the community, the economy fired up in this direction. And yet when we were standing out in front of their building, banging the cymbals, going, hey, come and join us, come and join us. It was almost like they pulled the blinds and, you know, like, wait, where'd you go?
The insurance salesman's here again.
Wouldn't answer the door.
Yeah.
The no soliciting sign.
It was a little funny, you know. I got some looks from people. One of them even said, competitor. And I'm like, competitor? What am I competing
in? We won't name that person,
right,
but I was rather surprised when I got that. So, no, that's not it at all. I mean, we were just trying to do something good here. And
exactly.
Kind of got beat down on that a little bit, but you live and you learn.
I'd like to see the high school kids come out and do some programs and, you know, and show how the teachers can roll this IoT thing into their curriculum and college and everything else. I mean, every aspect of it from top to bottom just reeks of new business in Michigan and new jobs and you know, and all sorts of good things. We've been trying to diversify for years, and here's the one thing that's right squarely in front of us that's tied into vehicles with the autonomous and everything else. And we ought to be all swimming in the same direction.
Well, and these are the kind of jobs, too, that, yes, they're automotive related, but if it's automotive IoT jobs, they'll be a whole heck of a lot less cyclical than the production is, the actual manufacturing of automobiles.
And these have agriculture and health care.
Where does it stop? It doesn't. You know, all these talking appliances are all machine to machine. You know, talk about Whirlpool. With that crazy $5,000 refrigerator that talks to you.
Yeah, right? I don't want my refrigerator scolding me about my dietary choices. I just
Matt,
really
you're eating just way too much bacon again.
You've got to move to a more plant-based diet.
Yeah, right.
I'm starting the where's my beer IoT.
Bacon and beer. Oh, my two favorite fruits.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Okay.
No, so nice being naughty, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, lots of stuff. So we're still talking to everybody. Rick and I are meeting after the show here to kind of map out how we're going to go back out and say to folks, hey, we're still doing this, but we didn't maybe start as well as we should have, but now we've learned a lot, and this is what we want to do and get more community buy-in. So
do you have ideas for, like, different learning tracks, that kind of thing, or what do you think about that? Okay.
Yeah, we do. We had cybersecurity in there, of course, autonomous vehicles and – I mean, the list was actually too long, and we had to pare it down to like a half a dozen.
Right.
But we left it open for our speakers to kind of shape it, too. If somebody came to us and said, you know, I'd really like to talk about this, and it was a hit, then, of course, we would have steered things in their direction and still will. But agriculture and healthcare and all of these things.
Tourism, for that matter.
Right.
We're going to lose Eric there. He keeps falling over in his chair. So,
bring your son into work.
Yeah, you know, so see what Dad's doing here at the studio. So I think Eric might have had a little drinky poo before he got here or something, like he's falling over. But no, maybe not. So, we have lots of stuff that we can talk about and do. I mean, but in the end, it's really whatever the customer wants, right?
Right,
I mean, that's basic business. So that's what we're trying to ascertain right now. So that's the next step is we're just going to go out to everybody and say, okay, help us with this. I mean, this is your event, too. We want you to participate at whatever level you want to participate, but give us some guidance on what it is that we should be hitting on here. I mean, tourism is the number two industry, or agriculture, depending on the year.
What year it is.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
How good the cherry crop is.
Yeah, the auto industry is always number one, and you couldn't – I mean, autonomous vehicles, that's what IoT is all about, right?
You know?
So I don't think in, like, the what was that guy in the first segment said 5 or 10 years. I'm still dubious. I think it's a ways out on that, but that's another thing.
Well, yeah, and it'll be commercial vehicles first, I think.
I think so too.
Yeah,
because they can spend more money per unit,
right?
And they have,
and the cargo isn't quite as precious,
right? And the labor costs are a big part of their costs. Right. I have a couple of relatives who are truck drivers who see this coming, and they're just hoping they can hang on long enough to retirement before this happens.
I was at the MVCA event last November. Bob Lutz was there, and his theory is essentially it's going to be like a railroad train on the highway, and there'll be a lead engine, as it were, and then everybody will kind of glide in and hook up, wirelessly or however they're going to hook up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so it's like building railroad coaches. And he said it's going to take the auto industry in a whole different direction. It's just going to be, you know, like being on an airplane, very comfortable seats, and you can walk around and all that jazz. Now, whether Les is right or not, I'm not sure, but it is an interesting idea.
Yeah. And was he talking about that for passenger vehicles or commercial vehicles or both?
He thought that was going to be the way for everything. It's just... Yeah. We're going to have we always put railroad tracks back in on the highway, the trolley, right? If we're going to do that,
the M1 writ large,
digital railroad tracks.
I think that I still think the whole idea of having an individual transportation vehicle is so ingrained in American society. I'm not sure I buy that, but. And we'll see.
Well, I'm telling you, the millennials are different about that, though.
That's true.
You know, I mean, both my kids own cars, but the trend is for less car ownership, even in, especially as more people live in cities now that have decent mass transit, unlike Detroit.
But on the other hand, when they start popping babies, they move out to the burbs, and then they need a car.
Yeah. And well, God help them, it might even have to be a minivan.
This would change that.
Yeah.
They wouldn't necessarily have to have the car, and they'd be able to move anywhere else that they wanted to go. I mean, it does open up a lot of opportunity that doesn't exist outside of the densely populated areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you could come up with some way to give people mobility the way a car does now without actually having to own one, I think that's the holy grail, right?
Right, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, because
actually,
ownership.
They can be a pain.
Yeah.
Well, I just saw a study that...
And they usually sit in your driveway depreciating, you know?
Yes, especially that first 2 years. I just saw a study that showed that, the cost of ownership for a car now is so high that the average American can't afford a new car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at... You trick them out a little bit. You're up to $40,000 just like that.
I would love a truck. I can't afford to drive a truck. You know, I mean, they're like 50, 55 grand now with anything nice on them.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So everything to me, anyway, just screams lease, lease, lease.
Yeah. Like
I'm driving my Chevy.
Or used.
Yeah. Silverado, $150-something a month. But, you got to give it back someday,
Hopefully you haven't gone over the 15,000 miles, right?
No. I did step up to the larger number because, that can be a problem.
Yeah.
They get you on the other side.
Yep. Oh, you feel even worse when you don't use the miles that you paid for. So.
Then you want to go on those last-minute vacations.
Yes. Right. Where do you want to go, honey?
So let's drive to the Outer Banks. We don't need to fly.
Really. Oh, All right. So we are retooling.
Yeah.
Don't have it all worked out yet.
Keep an eye out. And is there a website where you've got a placeholder?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So the next stages are going to be talking to and collecting the information from all of these people so that we can show everybody the magnitude of the interest in IoT and who's out there and so on. The website's called IoT Tech Connect, IoTTechConnect.com. And we are, as of even next week, starting to put everybody's catalogs of information out there. So getting involved with us isn't just revolving around the show coming up in March. It'll actually get you seen by other people. It's a great networking opportunity. The number to call is 855-6-CLOUD-1. Mike and I are out there in the digital realm, with our email addresses and phone numbers and everything
else.
Digitally,
I'm easy to find, Otherwise, if the sheriff knows where I live, that's no good, right? So,
All right.
Time to move again.
Yes.
Want to thank Rick Beckers, CloudTech One CEO, about the IoT Tech Connect conference coming up in March. And thank all of our guests today. Selena Mancina, Director of Operations at Grand Circus. Cybersecurity expert Dan Lorman. Keith Brophy, State Director of the Michigan Small Business Development Centers. Hey, I said it that time.
You got it.
And his guest, Mark Brandt of First Community Bank. Mike, another good show.
Thanks. Well, we do try.
We do our very best.
Yes. I enjoyed myself.
And of course, we have to thank Jessica.
You had to be on it today because those two phone-ins were very different volume levels, and I saw you.
Yes, yeah, quite different.
Yeah, you were.
And for all of our fans,
she was twiddling like crazy those knobs and sliders over there. I can tell you.
I don't see them installed yet, but for all of our fans out there, Dave tells me they're going to put video in the studio.
Yep.
So you'll be able to see the Jessica cam.
The Jessica cam
when we're
is
live,
coming.
You know,
that's
so
right.
She's excited about that, right? Excited?
Oh, I'm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can hear it in her voice. She's
the
excited.
Enthusiasm,
thrilled,
the passion, just
thrilled beyond belief. Yes.
And honestly, it is great for the shows, though. So.
Yes. Okay.
Right. Well, I'm going to have to invest in better shirts, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I got my Hawaiian shirt on today because nobody can see me, right?
I'll just wear a green one and you guys can doctor me in.
Okay. Yeah, oh, yeah. Just blend go. Into the
yeah,
wall.
Yeah, wear a green one, you disappear. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see you next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern time, folks. And anytime you like on the internet, iTunes, SoundCloud, and a bunch of other places,
podcastdetroit.com.
And mitechnews.com, of course. But until next week, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.